Hello, everyone. I'm Nan Hee In. I'm a correspondent governor of the club. But just a few things first. Can I just ask everyone to turn off or silence their phone, tablets, or any handheld devices? My, oh my, it's so eye-opening or alarming to have this event sell out so fast. It shows that everyone encounters unbearable people. You're all here because you're all fed up and you want to do something about it, or it reflects the stature or popularity of our speaker. In any case, I hope everyone here benefits from this talk in any way. I'm honored to present our special speaker today, Ajahn Brahn, abbot of Bodhinyana Monastery in Australia and the spiritual advisor to Bodhinyana International Foundation. Today, the monk will share how to deal with difficult people, strategies that are based on Buddhist traditions. Brahn goes on tour around the world to talk about similar themes at major conferences around the world, so we're thrilled that he can pop by the club to shed light on the topic. He has also written numerous international bestsellers, including Good, Bad, Who Knows, where apparently it was a number three bestseller in Germany last year. It's available at the front entrance. Everyone, please give a warm welcome to Ajahn Brahn.
Very good. And as you know, some of the most difficult people are journalists. So I remember on one occasion that a journalist from the Australian newspaper, he called me up and he said that he'd been interviewing every religious leader he could find in Australia on a story. You may remember many, many years ago, there was an accusation that a US Marine in Guantanamo Bay took a copy of the Holy Quran and flushed it down the toilet in front of the Muslim prisoner. And there were riots throughout the Muslim world. And he was doing a story on the riots because of the accusation of desecrating a copy of the Quran. And he'd asked every religious leader in Australia, now it was my turn. He said, I've asked everyone the same question, now I'm asking you, what would you do, Ajahn Brahn, if somebody took a Buddhist holy book and flushed it down your toilet? What would your response be? Without missing a beat, I said, sir, if someone took a Buddhist holy book and flushed it down my toilet, the first thing I'd do would call a plumber. I've got to use that toilet. And he said, that's the best sensible answer he's got all day. We're very practical. But then I got serious to him because the joke was not enough. I said, you can flush as many Buddhist holy books down the toilet. You can destroy as many Buddhist monasteries, you can blow up any Buddhist statues, you can even kill the monks and nuns, but I won't allow you to flush down what Buddhism stands for. You can destroy the temples, but you won't destroy the peace and the forgiveness, the compassion, the wisdom. And I made this great distinction between container and contents. In religions or any other philosophies, any other cultures, we have the containers, just like the Buddha statues, the temples. The books is a great container. But remember what the contents are, what it teaches inside those books. And making the difference between the container and the contents means you can destroy as many containers as you like. But the contents, the principles which lie underneath that, please let us keep that. So when we have the difficult people which you do meet in life, there is many ways that we can deal with those difficult people, and we can deal with them with either humor or with wisdom, but please do never deal with it with giving anger back. And dealing with difficult people with humor, you notice a really, really nice retort does very, very good. And I can't go past good old Oscar Wilde, that when he came out of a club drunk in the early hours of the morning, a woman saw him, and a woman turned around to Oscar Wilde and said, "Sir, you are drunk." And immediately he said, "Madam, you are ugly." And said, "The only difference between us is in the morning I will be sober." So that's how to deal with a difficult woman. But sometimes we have to deal with difficulties in our business, in our work. And again, instead of getting angry back, it's much better to use a bit of wisdom, a bit of lateral thinking. And this example I'm going to say, a real example, is one of my friends. He had a little business in Perth, Australia, where I live. It was a car repair business. When he came to work early Monday morning, there was a car parked across his garage, or across his entrance, his little road going into his garage, blocking all traffic in, all traffic out. So he rang up the local authorities and said, "Please remove this car. It's blocking entrance to my business." And the local authority, what they call the local government council, replied, "We will send one of our officers to put a sticker on the car." "That won't help, putting a sticker on the car." He said, "The sticker has to be on for 5 days before we can move it. That's all we can do." "What am I going to do with my business? No one can get in and go out." He said, "I'm sorry, that's the law." Sometimes governments can be very difficult. So what he did, he got his truck and he parked it in front of the entrance to the local council. And when they said, "Move it," he said, "Put a sticker on it. I'll move it in 5 days." And of course, you know what happened next. They moved the car in front of his business, and then he moved the car in front of their business. So sometimes you don't get angry. Getting angry at the council or whatever, or the local government, of course, that never helps at all. Use a little bit of wisdom. And of course, the other difficult people to deal with often is lawyers. And I hear there's quite a few lawyers in here today. Because this is actually supporting journalists against lawyers. That's always a difficult sort of people to deal with. But I'm not sure if you also remember, there was a very famous case in New York many years ago where a newspaper, they printed the headline that the half of the government in this state, half of the government was corrupt. And of course, the government got an injunction from the lawyers saying, "This is defamation, retract." So the editor of the newspaper, he had a, what should I do? Protect journalistic integrity and go with the story that half of this government is corrupt, or to retract. And he found this very, very wise compromise dealing with the difficulties of lawyers. The first headline read, "Half of the government is corrupt." And so he wrote the next day the headline, "Retraction, half of the government is not corrupt." Thereby using wisdom to overcome that difficulty. And sometimes, you know, you despair that when there is a difficult situation or a difficult person, you just don't use your brain and find a way of circumventing the problem by using wisdom and also laughter as well. So, of course, I have a very difficult time sometimes as a monk dealing with difficult people, dealing with governments and stuff, but you also know that if you have a difficult person, actually, there's no such thing as a difficult person. There's a person who sometimes behaves difficultly. And part of my job as a monk, I go into prisons. And there's some very difficult people inside those jails. There is some really, really gorillas. And I remember that I was given a security pen once because the prison I was visiting, many people had been raped. Visitors, not just girls, men as well. And I remember that this prisoner, who's really big, came up to me and he said, "And I see you got one of those security devices." And he said, "Do you think you'd even reach for it before I jumped and raped you?" I said, "No, you're probably much too fast." He said, "Yeah, I am fast. I could get you before you even blinked." It's a very dangerous situation in prison. Some of those prisoners are in there for so long they've got nothing to lose. The life sentence, and it really means life. How can you add any more to that? So, it's a difficult situation. And so how I dealt with difficult people in prison, I never saw a criminal when I was in jail. I never saw a rapist, a murderer. I saw many people who did crimes. I saw many men who had murdered, and many men who had raped, but I never saw a rapist. I realized they're much bigger than the problem for which they've been put in jail for. And I learned how to look at the other part of the person. And a wonderful thing happened. When I looked at the other part of the person which hadn't done the crime, then the person saw that themselves. And when they did get released from jail, if they did get released from jail, they never went back again. I had one of my great compliments from a prison officer who rang me at my monastery and said, "Can you please come back to teach? I was too busy going to places like Hong Kong." And I said, "I can't, I'm too busy." And he said, "But we want you to come back." I said, "I'll send somebody." He said, "No, we want you." "Why me?" Because he said, and one of my great compliments was, all the prisoners who came to my classes, once they were released from jail, never once came back again. Somehow you've done something to deal with a difficult person and actually turn them around. So if in your work you have a difficult boss, they're not a difficult boss. They're a boss who sometimes does very difficult things to deal with. Number one, don't give them any reaction back. Because once you give them reaction back, they have got you under their control. Never let anybody control you. That's why they shout at you. That's why they blame you. That's why they're angry at you. They're trying to get some reaction out. If you try and react, if you do react to their speech, then they've got control over you. The best thing to do is just stand there and just listen as they're shouting at you. And once they finish shouting at you, try what we call in Buddhism the 1 minute or 30 second silence. Once they finish speaking, don't explain or try and argue back. Look at them for 30 seconds in silence. What that actually does is give that difficult person a chance to reflect on what they've just done. Give them an opportunity to be able to feel just the terrible way they've spoken to you. Because if you speak back immediately, then they never really understand what they've just done. They never get that personal reflection back. So that's a wonderful way of doing things, is actually to give them the 1 minute silence. And of course, the other way to deal with it is actually just to speak very softly to them. There was one of my disciples in Sydney, and she had a business, a clothing industry. She was a fashion designer, and a small business from home, and she managed to negotiate a big contract with a firm in London. With all the negotiations back and forth, email and phone, it was time to sign the contract. So they invited her to come to London as soon as possible. And this lady, Julie, she had a small daughter. I've known her since she was actually when she was in the tummy, before she was born. Her name was Holly. And so Julie had to leave her little daughter, only about 4 years of age, in Sydney with her father, and get the first flight to London. And when she arrived at Heathrow, she only had a chance to check into the hotel, shower, get changed, and then go to the office of the boardroom, of the company, sorry. And as soon as she arrived in the boardroom, tired, jet-lagged, the other directors told her, "You've wasted your time. You might as well go straight back to Sydney. The boss is in a bad mood. He's a very difficult person. No way is he going to sign your contract. You might as well go." But if you have just traveled halfway around the world, you're not going to go away that easily. So she said, "I don't care if he signs it or not, at least I'm going to wait and see him. suit yourself. So Julie, being a Buddhist, she sat down in the corner and did her meditation. 5 minutes later, the boss came in and saw this woman sitting cross-legged in the corner of his boardroom. Who's that? What the hell does she think she's doing? She can't do that in my boardroom. And she opened her eyes, stood up, and walked towards the boss. Because she was so peaceful, so calm in meditation, she walked towards him without any fear. She didn't let him control her happiness. And she told me the words which came out of her mouth were unpremeditated. They just flew out by themselves. She looked at this boss who was still scowling and told him, "You have such beautiful blue eyes like my baby Holly back in Sydney." And the difficult boss did not know how to deal with that at all. It's like his brain just fused. And for 1 minute he stood there with his mouth open. And then he smiled and said, "Really? Is that true?" And then she had her contract signed 1 minute later. She wanted to leave to go and have a rest after such a long journey. But she was not allowed to leave. All the other directors surrounded her and said, "We're not going to let you go until you tell us, how did you do that?" And how she did that was, number one, was not responding to the anger, the difficulty of that person. And number two, looking at something in that person which wasn't difficult, the soft side of them, and getting into that soft side of a person, what I call like the leverage point. Everybody has something you can lever. For example, some of the most difficult people in the world are your children. And how do parents deal with them? A couple of weeks ago I was in Bangkok at one of the international schools talking to the parents. And one of the parents said, the mother said, "I take my 13-year-old daughter to school every morning. She is so negative." And I point out to her the beautiful trees and the birds and the wonderful blue sky. And all she says, "No, all I can see is the traffic and the dirt and the pollution." How can I get her to be more positive? I said, "Very easy. Teenagers are always rebellious. In principle, they will always do the opposite of what their mother and father say. So tomorrow when you take her to school, point out, look at all the pollution, look at all the traffic, look at all the dirt." And in principle, she look at the beautiful sky and the birds and everything else. That's kids' nature. And if that doesn't work, use what I call girlfriend power. Boyfriend power. Your children are very difficult, but their weak point where you can leverage is their boyfriend or girlfriend. One of my disciples, one of my followers, his son was at university, was going out every night, just partying, going to nightclubs, and his grades at university were going down, 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 about to be thrown out. Mother and father could not talk to him. He'd say, "Yes, Mom, yes, Dad," and do nothing. So one evening, the father waited for him to come home with his girlfriend, maybe about 1 o'clock in the morning. When he came home with his girlfriend, the father said, "Come inside, both of you." The boyfriend was terrified of being humiliated in front of his girlfriend. But when they went into the lounge room, the father never talked to his son. He just talked to his son's girlfriend and said, "I'm not quite sure where your relationship is at, but you've been going out a while now. It may so happen that later on you may decide to take your relationship to the next level and commit. You may even one day decide to get married. And if you do get married, I'm sure you won't want to marry someone who hasn't got a university degree, who is stupid. And she said, well, but he's going to university. Yes, but his grades are going really way down. He's not doing his assignments in time. He's in danger of getting kicked out. I never knew that, said the girlfriend. Okay, I just thought I'd let you know. Good night. Have a good night. And from that time on, that boy had no chance. His girlfriend was on his case every day, always checking his results, always checking his grades. And of course, his grades went up. We call that girlfriend power. So mothers and fathers, you've got no way of influencing your children when they get to teenage years. So the way to do it, find their weak point. Boyfriend, girlfriend. If they haven't got a boyfriend, girlfriend, hire one. A new business in Hong Kong. Boyfriend, girlfriend for hire. And then you've got full power over them. So everyone has their sort of weak points. And of course, one of the great weak points with people who are difficult. Now, even the people who are difficult, they always, there's some problem. Why are they acting that way? A lot of time it's they're tired. So if someone is difficult, you must always be very, very sensitive. If you're going to talk to them, choose the right time and place to talk to them. If you have like a difficult husband, don't talk to him when the soccer is about to start or when his soccer team has lost. You've got to use the right time and place. If you have a wife who's causing you difficulty, it's so easy. All you need to do is to take her out one evening. Take her out to her favorite restaurant, to a 4 or 5 course meal. And by the time you get to the 5th course, she's so soft and malleable. You can do whatever you like with her. That's when you start talking to her about the difficult things in your life. So sometimes choosing the right time and place to talk to people. And of course, that means you actually prepare the person to take out those obstacles so you can really talk to them. Because one of the difficulties I face, and of course you can understand this, as a monk, you know, I can't charge anything. So I have to raise money from donations, and everybody is difficult when you start to talk about donations. So I've found a way of using humor to be able to pay for my monasteries. Once there was a little spider, and the spider was born in a lovely house and built a nice web in the corner of a room. The little spider put so much care into building its web that if there was such a thing as Spider Home and Gardens, it would be on the front cover. And as soon as it built its first web, it sat in the middle waiting for lunch. And just after 5 minutes, the woman of the house came, saw the spider web, took a broom and smashed it to bits. And the spider had to run for her life. She went in the house next door. The same thing happened. As soon as it finished the web, smashed again. 3rd house, 4th house, 5th house, 6 houses it went to, every one was smashed to bits. And at that point, this little spider got depressed. What's the point? I don't ask for much, just a little corner of a room, and I just catch the bugs which people don't want anyway. Why are people so cruel to spiders? I'm so rejected, so tired, so hungry. And the spider got depressed. No one loves spiders. And the depression got worse and worse. And that little spider became suicidal. Became known as a suicidal spider. She tried to walk under people's shoes on the sidewalk, but always managed to find the place between the sole and the heel. crawled across the road, but always went between the tires rather than underneath it. Have you ever noticed when you're depressed, you can't do anything right, not even suicide? So suicidal spider was staggering along the road like a drunk person, crying, really sad. And then suicidal spider, he thought that someone was looking at him. You know when someone stares at you, you sort of know. And he looked up, and there was the fattest, happiest spider you've ever seen in this world. Happy and jolly. And the little suicidal spider said, Why are you so happy? And the fat spider said, Oh, I've got a wonderful place to live. And he said, Why didn't you come and live with me? And the suicidal spider said, How come you are so fat and happy? When you built a web, didn't someone try and destroy it? And the fat spider said, No, I've only built one web in my whole life. It's still there. And you catch lots of food? Look at me, said the fat spider. I catch lots of food. There's enough there for both of us. Come and stay with me. And they said, Where on this world can you build a spider web which no one ever destroys? And the fat spider said, Oh, I built my web in the donation box of Ajahn Brahm's monastery. No one ever disturbs me there. So please disturb my spiders. Thank you very much.
Okay. For a second there, I forgot that we're at the FCC and not a comedy club. But anyway, I'm going to open this up to the floor, so if you can raise your hand, and if the mic gets to you, state your name and organization if you are with one. Anybody have any questions? Really?
Can I tell another story quickly?
Okay, go on.
Okay, this is Buddhism, karma and reincarnation. Because somebody once asked the Buddha, why are some people wealthy, some people are poor? You know, some of you work so hard and still you're poor. And the Buddha gave an answer, some karma from the past which makes you poor or rich. And then he asked a second question, why are some people beautiful while other people are ugly? What karma did you do in the past to be ugly in this life or beautiful? And you may notice when I mention the word ugly, I looked at the table. Because once when I told this story, I said the word ugly when I happened to be looking at one woman and she complained. Why do you say ugly when you're looking at me? It's even more troublesome when I say the word beautiful and happen to be looking at a girl. They get the wrong idea. So then I decided to try and look at a guy when I said the word beautiful, and that's even more dangerous these days. So now I look at the table. But then after giving a good answer, the Buddha asked they asked a third question of the Buddha. Why are some people intelligent while other people have a hard time at school and university? What karma did you do in the past to be stupid in this life? And what karma do you have to do now to be intelligent in your next life? No karma rebirth. And the Buddha said the karmic cause for stupidity in your next life is not asking questions in this life. Any questions? It's your choice. That's actually true, the Buddha said that. If you don't ask questions in this life, you're going to have a hard time at school next life.
Apparently we have a hand up at the back.
Yeah, I can't see you, so just please shout out the question.
I thought your suggestion about, I don't know what you call it, meditative silence for 30 seconds or a minute was very interesting, but in the heat of a conversation with someone who's difficult and is obviously pushing your buttons, do you have any techniques to avoid taking that bait? You know, how do you avoid... If your personality is given to responding in anger, how do you avoid doing that?
Okay, just like in a computer, you put in an antivirus so that when the virus actually comes up, the antivirus kicks in. So you're with a difficult person, they pushed your buttons before. So when you are not in front of them, at home, just in your desk, they're not around, keep telling yourself, that button I will not allow to be depressed. I will not allow them to upset me. I will not allow them to upset me. I will not allow them to upset me. A little bit of self-hypnosis, conditioning. And you will find if you give that some information to yourself, tell yourself that before you meet them, then the old habit which they abuse, what you call pushing your buttons, that button has been removed and you don't react. So it is a way of reconditioning yourself, retraining yourself. It's really important, I've found these days, with married couples, because sometimes you do press each other's buttons. There's an old story, you can tell how long a person's been married. In the first year of marriage, the wife listens to the husband. Second year of marriage, the husband listens to the wife. In the third year of marriage, the neighbors listen to both of you. You argue so loud. So what we actually learn how to do is actually not to react in that same old way. And to be able to do that, it's just a little bit of training to tell yourself, I will not respond in that way, I will not respond in that way, I will not respond in that way. When you're relaxed, when the problem is not in front of you. A little bit of self-hypnosis, self-conditioning, brainwashing, whatever you wish to call it. And you'll be surprised how well that works. Preparation. Does that sort of answer the question enough, or do you want some more?
Okay. Any more questions? Oh, there's a gentleman up there.
Yes.
Hi. Basically, on the flip side, if you know that yourself that you are a difficult person, then what can you do to proactively change your own ways?
One thing you can do is learn how to rest more. Most people are difficult because they're so tired. They're exhausted. They're at the edge of their resilience. And that is one of the biggest things which I know is happening in our world today. People don't know how to rest. They don't know how to even sleep at night. So that they wake up in the morning, the only way they can be human is with a couple of cups of coffee. And that is something very, very, very wrong with our present condition. So please learn how to relax. When you do have a weekend off, don't go around playing golf or shopping. Just rest. Stay more time in bed. I have got this great business opportunity for anyone who wishes to take it up. Have Sleep Resort. A hotel somewhere nice and quiet. It doesn't have to be that far away. And all you give is beds. Quiet beds. No entertainment, nothing else, just to catch up on your sleep for 2 or 3 days. Where you can actually have breakfast, lunch, dinner, any time of the day or night. So there's no need to get up for anything. And just catch up on your sleep. What will happen then is you get rid of your sleep deficit, you become more relaxed, more resilient, and then you won't be a difficult person. The only reason you're a difficult person is not because you're a bad person, it's because you're exhausted, you're on your edge, which means you've got no resilience, you've got no sort of space there to accommodate people who irritate you.
Is there a question right at the back, right? You have to go through to table 9, I think.
And again, you can always come back again if you don't agree with the answer, want me to elaborate. Please ask more.
Okay. My name is Robin Wong. I'm retired already. But in my experience in a corporate life, I mean, I come across many very difficult bosses. Some of them are really bullies, right? And I mean, in a case like that, I mean, a lot of people ask me for advice how to deal with those guys. Because he has power over you, right? And no matter how, whatever you do, and his enjoyment just really pull you down and really, really pushing you. And no matter what you do, they it's very difficult to get away. Now, I mean, the approaches you use, I think it works most of the time. But the kind of people sometimes I find that to deal with them is to be upfront with them and be forefront and not let them bully you. So I just wonder, do you have different approaches as well?
Yeah, of course, you should never actually let a person sort of bully you. You have to sort of stand up for yourself. But there's also other little techniques you can use. And one of those techniques is when you see that that boss And if you see him or hear him do anything which is not the sign of a difficult person, not bullying, even the slightest bit of kindness, the slightest bit of civilized behavior, let him know that you've heard that, that you acknowledge that. Just look at him and smile and say, thank you so much for that. Overdo the praise of the sort of behavior you'd like to see. Simply, it's human nature. We like to be praised. We like to be acknowledged. And so if you acknowledge, praise the nice behavior of the boss, you find that part of him grows. This is basic sort of psychology, which I know when I go and say, see those prisoners, they're monsters. I look at the part of them and I praise the part of them which is good, which is wonderful, which is only tiny at first. And little by little that part grows because we like to be liked. So your boss, he must have some good qualities, some ways that he speaks or acts which you really respect. Let him know that, and he will show you more of that. At the same time, don't stand up to being abused. Bit of positive reinforcement.
Yeah.
Hi, my name is Annette. I would like to go back to that whole sort of 30-second silence and your approach. And it feels like, you know, to calm down the other person, a lot of it had to do with, you know, your presence and the presence of how you behave. Now, I feel that many of the difficult people I deal with over the phone. Now, do you have any additional sort of ideas of how to deal with it if you don't actually have that person-to-person contact? Because if I'm doing a 30-second silence, then they probably just feel like there was something wrong with the line and hang up. And I'm not sure it would work so well.
Well, I think that's quite a good thing if they hang up. They realize that that angry speech or that bad speech is not being acknowledged. But one good thing is actually just at least put the phone a few inches away from your ear, because sometimes they're shouting down there. And sometimes, again, just it's quite easy to actually to calm a person down just by speaking a little bit slower in a low tone. Instead of, if you get angry too and you speak very fast in a high-pitched tone, then everyone gets on edge and everyone is really unhappy. It's the tone of your speech and the speed of your speech also has an effect on people. And so that if you can train yourself when people are shouting at you and they do start to raise their pitch of their voice, lower the pitch of your voice and speak a bit slower. And that tends to calm the person down. That also works. Alternatively, if it's someone very close to you, say a family member, record that speech. And later, when they're in a reasonably good mood, play it back to them and say, this is how you sound. Do you want to be like this? Because a lot of people who are difficult people don't realize they're being difficult. They think it's just normal. And so one of the first things with any addictive bad behavior is for a person to realize it is a problem. Once they realize it is a problem, the solutions are usually very easy. So sometimes if it's a common problem and a family member, then record it and play it back to them when they're in a good mood.
Thank you. Florence? Thank
you. Florence de Changier, I'm a reporter with Le Monde. You don't reach the level that you describe where you're able to just be super peaceful at someone screaming at you overnight, I guess. So, and discussing with you before, you highlighted the importance of meditation, and I guess a lot of us would like to know more about your tools to get there.
Oh yeah, I mean, it's hard to actually to teach this now, but part of meditation is giving yourself a rest. Okay, this is a great little story, which is teaching this for a long time. It's now taught in Harvard. How heavy is my glass of water? The longer I hold it, the heavier it feels. After 1 minute, I start to hurt. In 2 minutes, I'm in pain. In 3 minutes, I'm in agony and a very stupid monk. What should I do when this gets too heavy to hold comfortably? You put it down and rest. Maybe 10 seconds, that's all. You can try this at home if you like. After 10 seconds you lift it up, it actually does feel lighter. Only because your arm has rested. It's the same weight. This is the reason why people get stressed out. It's because they have something to do, some project to finish off, and they've got a deadline. And when it gets uncomfortable, you keep pushing, even though you know you're tired. And you should know by now that when you're tired, your brain is not working efficiently. You're sitting on that computer screen, ideas don't come up, even words, you know, what is that word? You just can't remember it. Your brain is not working properly. And so it's much better when you get to the stage of tiredness, any time in your work, take a rest. Put down the work for 5 minutes. Meditation is one of the best ways of just relaxing. If you like to listen to fine music, listen to fine music. If you just go for a walk, go for a walk, but get away from that computer screen. And when you go back to that computer screen, your job, your project, your article, you find now your brain has recharged and you can get 3 hours work done in two. Which is why Harvard, which picked up on this, calls it an investment of time. By putting the glass down, meditating, taking a break, you are making more time. You're becoming more productive. More work done, high quality in less time. And also it means when you go home in the evening, you're not just a pain in the ass to the people you live with. Because when you're really tired, that is where you get to be a very difficult person. Give yourself a break. That's what meditation does. That's why it's called mindfulness in many places. That's why it is taking over many corporations in the world. When I was in Google, they've got a meditation room. Facebook, I sat in their meditation room. Anytime, the day, night, any worker, any time can go in there and just chill out. And they do that because they know they have to be productive. And you should know that yourself, that when you're really, really tired, you're writing an article, you're a lawyer, you've got a very difficult case, ideas, solutions, arguments don't come up when you're tired. It is in your interest to relax and learn how to relax. And then don't go thinking about the case when you're meditating. Everything gets put down. And then when you go back to it afterwards, you're clear, refreshed, ideas come, and you're productive again. That's how it works.
We have room for one more question over there.
Hello, Ajahn Brown.
Hi.
Hi. Some people are interested in deep meditation states. Other than actually sitting down for long periods of time, are there things outside of the meditation room that people can do to help attain those states?
Okay, that's really a bit off subject, but I was just telling Florence earlier, this is my marketing campaign to get people to meditate, because...
Be ready.
Because I started meditating when I was at university. That I remember very clearly. You know, it's in the 60s, 70s. I had a beautiful girlfriend. I had sex with her in Gloucester. Really good sex. I wasn't a monk yet. Really good sex with her. And then about when I left her in Gloucester, I went to do a meditation retreat. About 3 or 4 days later, I got in such a beautiful meditation, very deep. And it was a bliss, much better than sexual orgasms. The ecstasy was just so deep and so long. And my first reaction, because only maybe just a week between the two experiences, so I could compare them, why hadn't anybody told me about this before? And that's why I became a monk. Are you interested in the bliss better than sexual orgasm? And you don't have any problems with no relationships and just all the sticky stuff with the emotions, with you know, another human being. And babies and stuff like that, and using condoms or whatever. You don't need any of that. And your bliss is just, whoa, that's brilliant. And actually lasts much longer too. So, anyone interested? That's my marketing campaign for deep meditation. But that's, you know, just going on to the other side of it. This is just how not to deal with difficult people. And there are difficult people in this world. Dogs go woof woof. Bosses are difficult. You can't stop a dog going woof woof. You can't stop your wife going nag 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 nag. You can't stop your husband going, I'll do it later, darling. That's what husbands are like. That's what wives are like. That's what dogs are like. That's what bosses are like. So you've got to accept that some people are like that. So just let them be the difficult boss. And as soon as they've been difficult to you, rah, 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 let it go. If you are going to be a second in command, third in command, you've got to be what we call the rubbish bin, the trash can. You let your boss dump on you. But always be a trash can, a dustbin, with a hole in the bottom. So they dump on you, they shout at you, they scold you, and it goes right into you and out the other end. You don't keep anything. So don't, the boss calls you an idiot. What happened? This is just very quick. Boss calls you an idiot. What do most people think? The boss called me an idiot. They shouldn't have called me an idiot. Why did they call me an idiot? And you just realize he's called you an idiot three more times. Every time you remember it, he calls you an idiot again. So if you have a difficult boss, let him scold you only once. And don't remember it. Let it go. Then they can't call you an idiot more than once. That is a problem. We keep churning over the bad stuff or the bad ways we've been treated. And so they scold us all day for what they just said in the morning. So that's what we also learn. I just let that rubbish go.
Oh, thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Ah. So a tie of our appreciation. Unfortunately, okay. I think it's a tie, so I don't know how a monk's going to wear it. Anyway, thank you. His books are also over there. They're available for sale. I also wanted to mention
Can I scold you? It'd be difficult.
Yeah.
Why are you giving me a tie for? I shouldn't have a tie. I should have more than a tie.
I'll go bring this up at the professionals committee. but that Mike Chinoy will be screening on Monday, and we still have seats for From Ebola to Zika with Professor Baron Peter Pyatt. Otherwise, thank you very much for coming.
I'll give it to
that
somebody.
Was a very entertaining talk. Thank you.
Sorry, that was just great.
Yeah.